On the 4th of February 1936, at the Cambridge Arch Theatre, a short 23-minute film, co-directed by Henry Watt and Basil Wright, called Night Mail, made its premiere. Contemporary critics praised the film for its purpose. It was a rare one that managed to educate and be a piece of art in its own right, very much in keeping with the man whose ultimate vision for the film believed in this exact principle. That man was John Grierson. Raised in a strict Calvinist household, Grierson had no time for play acting and the sins of cinema as he saw it. He wanted the medium to be a vehicle to deliver the sermons from the pulpit of the cinema screen. Produced by the General Post Office Film Unit, Night Mail is a quite astonishing piece of film. It takes something fairly mundane, the sorting and delivering of mail, and probably something that, let's be honest, we never really think or wonder about, and turns this process into a gripping and beautiful piece of cinema. Its stars are ordinary people. It celebrates the collective, reinforcing the notion that a nation works by a series interlocking process in one balaic movement. A century later, a nightmare still resonates, and in this episode I will talk about the film's history, style, and its enduring legacy.
8:30 p.m. Weekdays and Sundays, the Down Postal Special leaves Euston for Glasgow, Edinburgh and Aberdeen. The Postal Special is a fast express, but it carries no passengers. It is manned by 40 post office workers. 500,000 letters are sorted, picked up or dropped at full speed during the night, or carried on for the morning delivery in Scotland.
One might be tempted to call Night Mail a documentary, and indeed, superficially at least, that would be a fair assumption to arrive at. However, this is very much open to debate and discussion, and it's not going to be one that I'm going to be having today, because I think to do so would become bogged down in interpretations and definitions of what a documentary is or is not. Instead, I think it's worth delving deeper in the man whose creative vision led to the production of Night Mail. John Grierson had no time for fictional films. He felt them to be rather silly, in fact. He wanted a cinema that could educate and act as a unifying force in showing the ordinary person and the material benefit of the medium to society. He was a huge admirer of the films of Robert Flaherty in 1926 reviewed Moana, in which he noted that the film had a documentary value. And this may well have been the first time the word was ever used to describe a film. He would later expand his definition of the word to mean the creative treatment of actuality. It's worth noting that despite having a reputation as being a documentary filmmaker, Flaherty was not opposed to creating reality as he saw fit. Nanook of the North is a prime example. Nanook did not live in an igloo as depicted. Instead, this is what Flaherty expected his audiences would like to believe was true, so instead created a reality in which was presented as fact. Likewise, Grierson liked to praise the working classes. He wanted to show us their craftsmanship and hard working, but they are rarely allowed to speak for themselves, and films made under his supervision regularly employed scripts, sets and actors. Grierson's vision was to establish a British documentary film movement, which he did by making films through the Empire Marketing Board. This was an organisation that was designed to promote consumers to purchase goods from the British Empire, and Grierson managed to set up a film unit within it, which would later become incorporated into the newly formed General Post Office Unit in 1933 under Grierson's leadership. And this was a government-sponsored filmmaking body tasked with producing films about Britain's public services, communications and infrastructure. And while its purpose was to inform and promote, the unit became a hotbed for some of the most innovative documentary work of the 1930s, and it attracted a remarkable group of young creative figures, including Basil Wright, Harry Watt, Humphrey Jennings, Alberto Cavalcanti, the composer Benjamin Britten, and the poet W.H. Auden, all under the guidance of John Grierson. And it was dedicated to creative discovery. They wanted to see what they could do with editing, sound, and music. And Nightmail is perhaps the best example of what this group and unit set out to achieve.
He's opened it tonight, mate.
Yeah. Trains from Lincolnshire and Derbyshire connect at Tamworth. Trains from Warwickshire and Leicestershire connect at Rugby.
Nightmail is about the overnight journey of a Royal Mail train as it travels from London to Scotland, and it shows how the letters and parcels are collected, sorted and dispatched whilst the train is moving forward. It focuses on the coordinated labour of the postal workers and the systems that deliver the mails to towns and cities across the country. And as the train moves through the night, the film combines images of machinery, landscapes and the human work that convey both the physical journey and the wider social function of the postal service in action. And in its closing sequence, a rhythmic poem is recited that celebrates the train's progress and emphasises the connection between communities across the country. It's a film that presents and celebrates the postal system as a kind of crown jewel of modern Britain, highlighting how cooperation between people, precision and the importance public infrastructure plays in people's everyday lives. Made with a budget of £2,000, Nightmail has a youthful abundance and energy to its filming, and this is really a reflection of how John Grierson wanted to set up the GPO film unit, because he didn't want established filmmakers. He deliberately chose young up-and-coming technicians and composers and writers and directors to be part of the GPO film unit. And this was also because he didn't really want to pay anyone all that money. So for example, H.W. Auden, the writer and poet, actually received less money working for the GPO film unit than he would have done working as a school teacher. It was understood to be about £3 a week. And indeed, as I will get to, some of the shots in Nightmail were basically got by cameraman Chick Fowle being dangled outside the train and held on by his ankles, coming apparently inches from being killed. And this is the type of thing that only young men would do. I mean, I think certainly the older we get, I think the more careful we become. But you can see the experimentation and the sheer fun of filmmaking in the finished product. And one of the things Nightmail does is remind you of the fun of filmmaking. And I see it a lot when I look at the other work of videographers and things like YouTube and Vimeo, and the way in which people have mastered packages like After Effects and Premiere Pro to do really ingenious transitions and use of drone shots and camera dollies. And this is all equipment that we can buy kind of relatively cheaply. And the filmmaking in Nightmail is very much part of that exploration of what can be artistically achieved with the medium of cinema. And it's no surprise that the filmmakers of the GPO film unit were greatly influenced by Soviet filmmakers of the period, the Eisensteins and the Vertovs, even though I think Dieser Virchow was quite dismissive of some of their work. But you can certainly see that they are trying to push the boundaries of what the medium is. So how does this then translate into the finished product that is Nightmail? Most notable aspects of the structure of Nightmail is its editing, because typically we don't like editing to draw attention to itself, but in this case it becomes central to the film's expressive strategy, Rather than simply documenting the postal train's journey from London to Scotland, the film constructs a visual rhythm, strongly imitates the film's physical motion. As the train gathers speed, the editing becomes faster, and during the slower or more transitional sequences, the pace of the cutting relaxes accordingly. And this deliberate manipulation of tempo aligns the viewer's experience with the mechanical momentum of the train itself. And the film reinforces this rhythm through repetition of very specific visual motifs, most notably turning wheels, passing tracks, signal lights, and the sorting machinery of the post office. And these images reoccur in pattern sequences, creating a sense of continuity and movement. And by returning again and again to similar shots from slightly varied angles or context, the film transforms everyday mechanical actions into visual beats within the film's structure. And also, the film's depiction of the work that is being done is shaped by this rhythm. Workers are rarely presented as individuals. Instead, their actions are intercut to emphasise coordination, timing and teamwork. The sorting, the bagging and the dispatching of the mail become components of a larger system, reinforcing the idea of collective effort. So Night Mail draws attention to itself in this way, and the editing is at the forefront of shaping meaning and the sensation of the film. You cannot not notice the editing in the film, and I dare say for contemporary audiences watching Night Mail, this may at first have seemed a bit jarring, yet whenever I watch the film, it perfectly mirrors the processes and the systems that the film is trying to show us. And again, I have to go back to the Soviet influence on Night Mail. Montage editing did the same, and I think in this case the filmmakers are exploring what editing can do in a creative way.
One, two.
Sound on Night Mail was handled by a young Alberto Cavalcanti, who himself would later go on to be a well-renowned director, including Went the Day Well, one of my favourite wartime films. And much like the editing in Night Mail, the sound design was also highly stylized. The production team did record sound on location. However, it was reshaped to that reoccur in patterns and timed to align with the film's visual style. This was done to reinforce the sense of momentum and precision that defines the train's journey. And in this way, everyday industrial noises become part of the film's soundscape rather than mere background atmosphere. Silence and abrupt sound cues are also strategically used to articulate the film's progression as it moves us through the country. Moments of reduced or absent sound create pauses that signal transition between location, task, or stages. And when the sound re-enters, it does so empathetically, drawing attention to a new rhythm or activity. And this controlled use of silence underscores the artificiality of the soundtrack and heightens the viewer's awareness of shifts in time and space. And collectively, these choices ensure that the audiences do not experience sound as simply background noise or purely a kind of supportive aspect of it. The soundtrack therefore becomes a central component of the film's form, drawing attention to the level of technical and artistic control involved in creating it. And by making sound overtly designed, Night Mail reinforces its very modern sensibilities and its ambition to move documentary material into a new place of creative expression.
Do This is the night mail crossing the border, bringing the check and the postal order. Letters for the rich, letters for the poor. The shop at the corner of the girl next door. Pulling up, he took a steady climb. The gradient's against her, but she's on time. Past cotton grass and moorland boulder, shoveling white steam over her shoulder, snorting noisily as she passes, silent miles of wind-bent grasses. Birds turn their heads as she approaches, stare from the bushes at her blank-faced coaches. Sheepdogs cannot turn her course, they slumber on with paws across. In the farm she passes, no one wakes, but a jug in a bedroom gently shakes.
There are differing accounts of how composer Benjamin Britten would come to work for the General Post Office Film Unit. One origin story is that John Grierson had asked the Royal College of Music to recommend someone who might want to become involved in film composition, and Britten happened to be the person who was chosen. However, he came to work for the GPO Film Unit. Britten was at the rather young age of 21, I believe, on a wage of £5 a week, which for then was quite a comfortable weekly salary. And he seemed to relish the challenge of being given projects to work on with relatively tight turnarounds. Early projects that he worked on were The King's Stamp in 1935, which was a documentary about the design and manufacturing of postage stamps, and my first interaction with his work, which was the film Coalface, made in 1935. Coalface is a film about the poor working conditions of coal miners in the UK, where a staggering 5 people a day were dying, and that equates to roughly 1,825 people a year. And it is a mind-blowing statistic to think that safety was taken so cavalierly by those in charge. And really, I think as well, it's a good indication of the kind of the working class and left-wing sensibilities of the GPO Film Unit, that they felt it necessary to bring attention to that subject. But one of the things about Benjamin Britten's work was that he wasn't a classical composer by any sense of the imagination. He would employ a variety of percussive instruments to imitate the industry of the documentaries that he was working on. And I would really recommend seeking out and watching Coalface. It is quite an extraordinary piece of work, because he was there. It's rumoured there that he made some of the score by wheeling a cart across sandy asbestos, which I would imagine, well, one only needs to imagine what a health and safety nightmare that would have been. But his work in Nightmare is also equally worthy of investigation. The score was completed in only 4 days using 10 different instruments. Much like the editing and the sound design, his music creates a relentless rhythmic momentum, particularly in the latter section of the film. And when used in conjunction with H.W. Auden's poem, the music of Nightmare and Auden's prose reinforce the idea of this vision of documentary as being a crafted, expressive form of mass communication. Auden's poem appears late in the film, after the postal system and the train's mechanic have already been carefully established through image, editing and sound. The audience by this point gets what the film is trying to say, but Auden's verse transforms that understanding into something rather symbolic, and I think actually quite effective. The poem mirrors the film's obsession with mere rhythm and movement, and its pace is tightly controlled as it accelerates, increasing in speed of the train as it approaches the Scottish destination. The rhythmic speech aligns precisely with the editing and Benjamin Britten's score, creating a rare moment of full audiovisual alignment. Words, music and image operate on the same rhythmic principle, reinforcing the film's commitment to the coordination and precision of the task that it's displaying. And the language reflects the film's modernist and experimental sensibility. It's really important to see the poem through the lens of the film's socialist foundations. It's because it's collective activity rather than the individual that is celebrated in the poem. Letters are not addressed to named protagonists, but to anonymous recipients, farmers, shopkeepers, lovers, business, emphasising the breadth of social life connected by this postal service. And this abstraction aligns with the film's visual treatment of labour, in which workers are shown to be part of an efficient, independent system rather than isolated individuals. Because if they were working as individuals, then the process simply wouldn't work. Crucially, the poem also articulates the film's humanistic core with the imagery of foreground machinery and process. Auden's words remind the viewer of the intimate human consequences of this mechanical process. The mail carries news of love, loss, commerce, and daily necessity. And in doing so, the poem bridges the apparent tension between industrial maternity and the experience of people living in the country, presenting them as mutually sustaining rather than opposed. And aesthetically, the poem makes the film's constructed nature at this point completely unmistakable. In its highly stylized delivery, it resists any form of naturalism. Indeed, it reminded me of something like almost kind of Bertolt Brecht would have written. And this self-consciousness is entirely evident in Nightmare's broader artistic vision. This isn't a film that is there to observe reality. Instead, it creates its own reality and shapes it into a unique cinematic event. And I think that the poem completes the film. There was some debate amongst the filmmakers whether or not to include it, and there was indeed quite a lot of resistance from the director Harry Watt whether to include it or not. And I think it was, I believe so anyway, from everything that I've read and the kind of the on the research that I was doing, it was kind of Albert Cavalcanti who was the kind of the driving process to have it included. But I think it works brilliantly, and I find it hard to articulate, but I find it strangely moving. It does, I think, celebrate the idea of this country as being a community, and also the different emotions I think that one can experience when receiving mail. I've received a letter a couple of years ago from a friend who I had something of a falling out of years ago, and it was a kind of a handwritten letter that was a kind of olive branch that saw a friendship that had been very much strained for a number of years come back together. So there is a kind of fundamental humanitarian truth to the words of Auden that transcend the film's contemporary setting right up to the modern day.
Place these over, covering the bags, see? Yeah. Then you do your cross wrapped up.
All tight.
Oh, it doesn't matter about them being tight. The main strap will tighten them up when she goes out. And then you put the other flaps over, seeing that the main strap's in the centre of the pouch. Then you secure the pouch up, and it's all ready for dispatch.
Come on,
Paul, you got that all right, haven't you?
I've got that, okay.
Right over there. Seems reasonable. We'll soon get on with it.
Hear more about it.
Here's the cardboard.
Cardboard? Yeah. One full pouch.
All of the film's technical aspects serve to highlight how Night Mail presents work, because it does so not as some kind of heroic or glamorous achievement, but as an essential and continuous process that is the basic underpinning of modern life. The treatment of labour is shown as restrained, systematic, and deliberately unsentimental, aligning it with its broader social and aesthetical aims, because the film focuses on routine rather than drama. The tasks performed by postal workers, like sorting letters, loading mailbags, and changing sacks at stations, are repetitive and procedural. And by showing these actions in detail and without the benefit of a narrative to really kind of explain or to talk about the individuals concerned, the film emphasizes the necessity of this work rather than making it appear to be something it isn't, which is particularly exciting. It's work that is portrayed as something that is to be done correctly, on time, every night, regardless of the situation. And it comes back to the idea of this film celebrating the collective rather than the individual. There are a few scripted scenes, and also it's worth noting that sets were built to shoot specific portions of the films in, and the workers, I can't remember the exact process, I think they were kind of told to sway as if they were on a train. But you see instances of the team working together, someone who can't quite read the address on a letter, and he's helped out by whom I'm assuming is a supervisor. It's not particularly, it's no attempt at a dramatic moment, far from it, but it does show you that people and workers in the film need each other in order to get the job done. There is no sense of kind of individual heroism, but instead work is presented as a shared responsibility within the organisation of the post office. And the film's style, I think, reinforces this perspective. We see close-up on very specific isolated actions, such as hand sorting, machinery operating, rather than faces or expressions of those doing it. And it shows you that there is a skill to what they are doing, that this is a labour which is about being effective. And we also see the way in which knowledge is passed down from generations. So we see one sequence where a man is being taught how to type a bag correctly, another one who's kind of shown how when to put the bag out for it to be kind of collected, and I think he has to wait for the train to go under a certain amount of stations and then count the beats, and they do this together, and then you see how the older workers are imparting knowledge on the youngers. And the very fact that the film is called Night Mail, I think, is worthy of discussion, because the film shows you that even when so many of us have kind of gone to bed, that there is this entire other world that comes alive. Were the film called Day Mail for something, you know, if it was just all taking place there, I don't think it would have the kind of the dramatic effect that it does, because you were just, it makes you aware that continually in society there is work being done that is essential for the running of the country. By stripping labour of glamour and focusing on precision, repetition and coordination, the film reaffirms work as a fundamental necessity of society. And what I find truly astonishing about Night Mail is the fact that how a group of young filmmakers were able to create a piece of art that is legitimately a beautiful, moving and technically astute piece of work about something seemingly so mundane, I think is a testament to the power of film as art, that it can do this. And it really does succeed as being both a historical record of how society once worked and a ambitious piece of art. Is a social document. It captures a moment in which modern Britain defined itself through public infrastructure, collective labour and national systems of communication. There is nothing like this anymore. We don't have national institutions like the post office was sold off years ago. All of our infrastructure and our production capabilities are now owned by either private companies or even indeed foreign powers. And the film shows us how the postal service once functioned in the 1930s, but how this work was done efficiently and how cooperation were understood as being strong civic values. And in doing so, I think it preserves a vision of society in which unseen labour sustains everyday life and it binds us all together. And at the same time, it endures as an artistic achievement, because it refuses to treat documentary as mere observation. As I've discussed through rhythmic editing and design, sound, music and poetry, it transforms functional processes into legitimate expressive forms of artistic ambition. Its modernist aesthetics makes the mechanisms of cinema visible. And what I find really interesting about Night Mail is when I kind of go out into the world and walk around, I notice things slightly differently. Like when I see a lorry driver going down the road, I wonder, you know, what goods is he bringing and what kind of story is behind what he's doing? Because without these kind of unseen, or certainly, I suppose unseen might be the wrong word, but these processes that we don't even really consider, there is a story and real people at the centre of it. I was thinking what would be an equivalent of doing a Night Mail today, and you could easily do someone kind of ordering something on Amazon, and then we would go from the process of that order going through the internet into a collection hub or a distribution hub or whatever they're called, and the process of how many people would be involved. So in conclusion, I think Night Mail is a really important piece of British cinema. It is a entertaining, beautiful and informative piece of work. I have a link to the film in the description so you can check it out yourself. I've actually got the a brilliant BFI DVD of the film, and it's also on a Blu-ray I've got about the I think it's called The Soviet Connection or something like that, but it's a series of films that influenced the GPO film. I will leave links to the DVD and the Blu-ray in the description as well. So many thanks for listening. You can email me at 24framescast@gmail.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at which is Thomas24FC. Many thanks for listening, and I'll be in contact soon. Bye.